Hi, I'm Erin Lundy.
And I'm Madeline Walden, and this is
Aquarium of the Podcific,
a podcast brought to you by Aquarium of the Pacific, Southern California's largest aquarium.
Join us as we learn alongside the experts in animal care, conservation, and more.
Welcome back to Aquarium of the Podcific. Today we are going to learn about sharks.
I'm really excited. We have one of our aquarists, Rachel Munson, and she's going to be joining us. She oversees Shark Lagoon, home to most of our sharks that we have here at the aquarium. And there are sharks in there that you can't touch, but the aquarium's also home to lots of shark species you can touch. And although that might seem really spooky to some people, I promise the bamboo sharks are very cute.
I think some people have really conquered their fears by visiting the aquarium and touching a shark.
Good little
I'm really proud of them.
I'm proud of them, too.
I'm proud of you, if you're listening.
It's interesting because, you know, we have so many people who are probably afraid of sharks or have this overarching fear, and then we have someone like Rachel whose whole job is to interact with them and train them and dive with them, and she gets in the water with some of our really, really big animals with no fear whatsoever. So we're going to ask her all about that and whether or not she feels like she's in danger when she's in our Shark Lagoon habitat. I think it's going to be a really good time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sharks get a really bad reputation, but I've learned so much from Rachel just working with her personally about how lovable they are and how sweet they are, and they're really adorable. So I'm excited for you all to listen and find out more about sharks today.
We also have a shark named Fern.
Yeah.
Which is very cute. And Baby.
And Baby and Gatsby.
They just all have the
cutest
names. They
do such a good job naming them.
They did a really good job with the names. And shout out to Theo, who is the sea turtle that we learned about a couple weeks ago that also lives in the Shark Lagoon and is apparently in charge of
the entire. He rules that habitat.
Which is funny to think about because he's just a little guy.
He's not that little.
He's just a really big guy.
He's a big guy. And I mentioned it later on the episode, but you can actually watch our Shark Lagoon habitat live thanks to our explore.org cameras. So definitely let us know, tag us on social media if you spot Theo or some of the other sharks we talk about today.
All right. Without further ado, we're going to bring Rachel in.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for joining us on the pod today. Welcome, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Rachel, what is your job here at the aquarium?
I'm an aquarist, so I work with all of the fish and invertebrates that you see here at the aquarium. I specifically work out at Shark Lagoon, so I take care of all of the sharks and rays and a couple fishies and a turtle that all live out in Shark Lagoon.
This episode today is specifically about sharks, but we might have to touch on the turtle for a second.
In between. That's totally fine.
We talked about turtles last week, so I'm sure I think we got a little introduction to Theo last week.
And how he rules Shark Lagoon, apparently.
Oh, yeah, he really does.
He's in charge over there. Anyways, back to sharks.
Yeah.
And your job, how long have you worked at the aquarium for?
Yeah, so I've worked at the aquarium for 10 years and have been working with sharks specifically for 8 years. And I really love it. Sharks are incredible animals to work with. They're so intelligent and beautiful and graceful, sometimes a little derpy too. But I'm always learning new things about them.
That's so cool. So what's your favorite part of your job and working with sharks?
My favorite part about working with sharks is both diving with them, because you really get a chance to like see them in their natural habitat and interact with them on a one-to-one basis. And then I also really love training them. I do work training the sharks. They are very intelligent. You can train them to do things like stretcher training, which means you can train them to come and swim through the stretcher. And you get a chance to like see their personalities. Like some sharks are like, wow, this stretcher is the best thing ever. And there's other sharks that look at the stretcher and they're like, oh my God, it's my worst nightmare. And you kind of have to like coax them and like, you know, use positive reinforcement to show these sharks that it's okay. The stretcher's not a scary monster. So it's kind of like, you know, if you have pets at home, like when you introduce anything new, your pets at home might be a little bit fearful of it at first. So
a little suspicious at
first.
Yeah. What is that thing?
What is that? Totally. Sharks are very similar.
That's so cool. I think people are going to be, we'll have to talk more about it. People are going to be really excited to hear that you dive with the sharks here at the aquarium because I think that's something like a lot of people would be afraid of. But that's part of your job. You're doing that how many times, like once
many
a week?
Times
yeah,
a
I mean,
week.
Many times.
Yeah.
A couple times a week, right?
Uh-huh. Yep. Awesome. Yep, I get in there quite a bit. The tank gets pretty dirty. Unfortunately, the sharks don't clean up after themselves, so I've got to do it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, a lot of people do think diving with sharks is very dangerous, and some people think I need to wear chainmail or something insane.
Or some sort of cage or something.
Totally.
But no, you're in there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The only thing that we have is we do have one safety diver, but really that safety diver is just to make sure that the working diver diver doesn't bash into the shark's way. Because, like, you know, the sharks are swimming and doing their thing. And sometimes when you're working, you can move quickly, especially if you're using a power tool and you're trying to go up to the surface. And if there's a shark up there, they might get bonked. And that would be so sad.
You have a shark bouncer alongside you.
Oh, my God. I've never heard of it referred to it as that. And I can't, like, think of anything else now. It's perfect. Incredible. Yeah.
We'll have to, we'll put a link in the show notes, but you can actually watch our Shark Lagoon exhibit on camera, thanks to explore.org. So you might be able to catch Rachel in there diving or some other members of our team.
Yeah.
Shark bouncing.
Yeah. Definitely.
Awesome. Cool. Erin, you have a couple of questions for Rachel today.
Sure. So first and foremost, why sharks?
I love sharks a lot because of the misconceptions a lot of people have about them, that they're very dangerous and they just, like, go after people. Like, they're the, like, basically paint them out to be these monsters. And
such a bad reputation.
They really do. It's really such a shame. And to, like, work with them and get to realize that they are complete opposite of that. The most, like, chill, relaxed animals that just want to do their own thing, that want nothing to do with people. And a lot of people tend to think of, like, oh, well, you work with sharks in an aquarium setting and they must be totally different than out in the ocean. And that's not the case. These are, you know, animals that are displaying natural behaviors even in this exhibit as well. So a lot of the sharks out in the ocean also are very chill and not something that people need to watch out for. Actually, it's sharks that need to watch out for people. Sharks are under threat by a variety of sources, whether it be overfishing, habitat loss, and then ocean acidification and temperatures rising. All of these things have negative impacts onto sharks, which is detrimental not only to sharks, but also the entire ecosystem. Systems as well.
Yeah, we're probably causing more harm to sharks than they've ever caused to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They get such a bad reputation. And do you think that some of that is maybe species specific? What species do we have here at the aquarium?
Yeah, so the bad reputation definitely comes from a particular species. The, you know, Jaws was made about it. So great white sharks.
Yeah.
But a lot of people look at a shark and they think that all sharks are great white sharks, and there are over 400 different species of sharks, and they all have very different body shapes and behaviors, and they all act very differently from one another. So they all have to inhabit a very similar, you know, habitat or space. And even sharks that look very similar, like body shape, they even have very minute behaviors that allow them to eat different prey in that same area. So these animals are really not competing with each other very often for resources. But yes, unfortunately, the big ones tend to give a bad rep for the little ones. Like, we've got teeny tiny little bamboo sharks that our guests can touch. So we've got bamboo sharks and epaulette sharks in our small touch exhibit that our guests can touch. And those guys only get to 4 feet maximum. They're very little. And then some of our bigger sharks, we have zebra sharks, black tip reef sharks, a sandbar shark, and then a gray reef sharks. The biggest one of that batch is the zebra shark. Our largest zebra shark is probably our individual named Baby. She's no longer a baby anymore.
She's
not a
baby.
She's always baby.
Totally. She is 7 feet long and about 120, 130 pounds. So pretty big, but her mouth is teeny tiny, maybe the size, like a little smaller than the size of a foam, maybe half the size or something like that. So they eat very small things like clams and squid and small pieces of fish too.
And the location of their mouth too, it's kind of towards their bottom, right? So
yeah,
they kind of are focusing on slow traveling animals of the ocean floor, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating.
That's pretty cool. And each of those, you've mentioned that the individual species have their own sort of personalities and demeanors. Is that the same with individuals? Do they each have their own personality as well?
Yeah, within that species? Yeah, definitely. We have, like, for example, the black tip reef sharks. We have two individuals, and one is older, and she's just so wise. Like, I can't fool her at all. So we have to do routine exams on our animals to make sure that they are nice and healthy. So we try to get them into our husbandry pool area, which is where we can corral them so our veterinary team can take a close look at them. But this older individual, we name her, it's more of an identifier than a name. Her name is Shark Lagoon Female. That's when we used to have two black tips, one in Trop Reef and then one in Shark Lagoon. Anyway, so we call her Shark Lagoon lovingly. Shark Lagoon wants nothing to do with the husbandry pool whenever she knows we need to do an exam on her. Whereas the younger one, Barbara, she gets a nice name.
Sharp named Barbara.
Yeah. But Barbara, she doesn't care. She has no fears. We'll go in the husbandry pool anytime.
Very individualistic, which is cool to think about. Mm-hmm. I have found that our older animals tend to be wise to the game when it comes to, like, veterinary. Just like your dog, right? You're like, think, oh, we're going to the dog park. And they know exactly when it's the veterinarian instead. And you can do it every day, and they still know. And it's the same with our animals. Like, the seals and sea lions, exactly the same. They're wise to our
game. They're just too smart.
Especially the ones who have been around the block a few times. Mm-hmm. Like, we've been through this.
Yeah.
So when you're doing exams in the husbandry pool, I know that sometimes we might utilize something called tonic immobility. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so sharks go into tonic immobility. It's where when you flip them onto their backs, they go into a catatonic state. Mm. And they kind of go into like a restful state, a calming period. It's really great because we can flip these sharks into tonic immobility and we can do exams without having to pull them out of the water and put them into a med pool where we have anesthesia in the water to kind of make them go to sleep. So this is great. So it's very minimally invasive, very stressful. Free and it makes it a lot easier for us and them to put them into tonic immobility, and we can do blood draws, we can do ultrasounds, and then I've even seen our veterinarian Dr. Adams do sutures and like little, like more for like pectoral fins and like small things like that. Definitely not like a massive surgery, but it was so quick. Yeah, for sure.
It's a quick little fix, just flip over.
Yep. There
you go. That's interesting. I don't know if do we know how that evolved with sharks or why they have that as an adaptation?
They're not entirely, well, I haven't done too much research recently, but from what I know, it has been used for females for breeding purposes, but males can do it too. So I'm not too sure if it, like the gene is just so closely ingrained with that behavior that it doesn't matter male, female.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Do they ever flip themselves back out of it, or is it basically until you... They do.
Oh, yes. Sometimes they're like, okay, I'm done. And you're like, actually, we're not done. I'm sorry. And then there's like examples like our zebra shark Fern, where she's not fully asleep. We can totally feed her when she's in tonic immobility. Oh, yeah.
I mean, a nap and a snack.
A nap and a snack. Exactly.
I love that for her. Good for Fern.
Yeah.
You can even reinforce that behavior, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
I think one of the misconceptions that we have is that sharks need to constantly be moving also to breathe and just to live. Is that true of all species of sharks or any species of sharks?
No, so not all shark species need to continually swim in order to breathe. What they do need is continual water flow over their gills. So there's some sharks that have special adaptations that allow them to push that water over their gills. For example, our zebra sharks have little spiracles. It's a hole on the side of their heads right close to their eyeballs. That draws water and pushes it right over their gills so that they can continually breathe. Whereas the black-tipped reef sharks, they do need to continually swim in order to breathe. So like that swimming and breathing behavior is so well ingrained that they often like say, for example, you need to anesthetize a black-tipped reef shark. When you're trying to wake them up, you do need to move them in order to get them to breathe again. Wow. So it's really cool behavior.
That is interesting. I'm just imagining the shark with like water wings as you're sort of like,
Here we go.
I know. That would be kind of cute. I think that we should invest in shark water wings now.
I love this. Yes.
Sold.
Boom. Done. What are the lifespans of some of the species that we have here? How long lived will they be?
We have species that can live pretty long. Anywhere between late 20s, early 30s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's really hard to find longevity studies. It's just like, especially on specific species. Mm-hmm. So I'm not too sure if this is a normal thing. From what I understand, it is, like talking to other aquariums mm-hmm. and other researchers, that this is a pretty typical for a tropical species. But there are, like as we said, there's 400 different species mm-hmm. of sharks. Depending on where a shark lives, it really affects their longevity. So tropical species, they tend to not live as long as, like, for example, a temperate or cold water shark species, like the Greenland shark.
Oh, those guys are crazy.
Yeah, they're so insane. Yeah. They can live to, like, 400 years or something insane.
I feel like so that's common with cold water species, right? They live longer. Mm-hmm. It's like the cold keeps them. Keeps them cold. Keeps them a little
refrigerated longer.
Oh, gosh. You stay fresh longer.
The metabolism is so slow, it just doesn't do anything.
I know that's true for our octopus, too. Our giant Pacific octopus is longer lived than the tropical species. Mm-hmm. It's cold water versus warm water.
Yeah. If only they lived 400 years, that would be...
That would be great.
It might be a little bit crazy to see.
I think that would be a little scary.
Yeah, maybe not.
Totally would.
They're too smart for their own good. Mm-hmm. But those Greenland sharks are very interesting. If any of our listeners have not seen a picture of a Greenland shark, mm-hmm. go look them up. They're odd looking. They look like they live to be 400.
Hi, Podcific listeners. Madeline here, recording this on my phone, so apologies for the change in audio quality, but I wanted to give some context for this next moment coming up. So we're talking about the Greenland shark. Our audio engineer, Scott, is looking up the Greenland shark on his phone and accidentally plays some music in the background. And I think it's a really fun moment, so I wanted to leave it in. But that way you have a little bit of context for what we're giggling about. Sing it, Scott.
Oh my god, I was just going to look one up and I forgot.
Oh my god, that was amazing.
I love it so much. Random
Tchaikovsky,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you're all good.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
The Greenland sharks.
Yeah.
Lyrics. I think we should put that sound effect. Look them up. They look like they
are
400.
I do want to see, actually.
Yeah. You've never seen one?
No, I don't think so.
I know
I'm picturing something. It probably, if it's a, what's the spookiest shark? That's what I want to know.
Oh, like a goblin shark is pretty spooky.
They're a little spooky.
I think cookie cutter sharks are spooky, only in that what they do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that. That mm-hmm. is spooky.
Oh, we should talk about spooky sharks.
That's like a Halloween edition.
Yeah.
The spookiest version of each animal. Uh-huh. And then it has to follow up with how adorable they actually are.
Agreed.
In theory, spooky, but in reality, very cute. Very cute. Mm-hmm. But Greenland sharks are a little spooky. Why do they live so long? What are they doing with all that time?
Yeah. Just sleeping.
Just floating around.
Yep.
Living the dream. Mm-hmm.
It's so weird to think about a 400-year-old shark. And you're like, oh my goodness, you have seen the birth of America. That is so strange.
That's totally what they worry about. They're just down there like, oh, what's America doing up there?
What are they doing up there now? Okay.
Get the sillies out.
Yes. So some shark species are extremely long-lived, and tropical mm-hmm. species are probably a little less so mm-hmm. because of a faster metabolism.
Sure.
But yeah, those Greenland sharks, man, they live forever, and we should definitely look up pictures of them. Cool. Another question that we had for you is, how can you tell the difference between a male and a female shark?
So male sharks have what are called claspers, and they are a modified pelvic fin. So if you look at a shark from the side, their side front fins are pectoral fins, and the next ones back are pelvic fins. And males have little extensions from that called claspers. They're used for mating purposes, and females do not have those.
Okay. Is that pretty standard across species?
Mm-hmm. Across species, and even rays have this same thing, too.
And actually, we were just going to ask if sharks are pretty sharks are pretty closely related to things like rays and skates, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And so, what is that whole family called? Like, what? How do we classify those guys?
Yeah, they're called elasmobranchs. They are a type of cartilaginous fish. So sharks, rays, skates are fish. But rather than having a bony skeleton like most fish that you think of, they actually have a skeletal system that's entirely made up of cartilage. And that really helps them to make them nice and light and very flexible, which is really handy in swimming. It makes them go a lot faster and occupy really interesting locations. Like think of like a ray who can like burn underneath the sand and things like that. And they also have a really cool adaptation. They have what are called the ampullae of Lorenzini. They are these tiny jelly-filled pores that typically are located around the snout, but you can find them around the body as well. And they allow them to detect the electrical impulses in the water. So that can be from like the heartbeat of an animal that they're trying to find, or maybe a predator that's coming by and they want to get away from that really quickly.
That's so cool.
It's so cool. And then a lot of sharks and rays have what are called dermal denticles. They are scales. So they are, like I said, they are a fish. So they do have scales, but they're not a normal scale. They are modified in that they have dentin on it, which is where the name dermal denticles comes from. Dermal denticles in Latin loosely translate to skin teeth. And so dentin is the same material that you find in your teeth. And sharks and rays have these more pronounced in sharks than rays. Rays dermal denticles are very, very fine and very small. But with sharks, you can see it pretty well, especially with our zebra sharks. They've got really large dermal denticles that you can see. They're beautiful. But those large dermal denticles really help to protect sharks from scrapes and abrasions. And then with pelagic or open ocean swimming sharks, it allows them to swim fast through the water.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized it made them faster to swim through the water. I think every time I've gone to an aquarium that has, like, a shark skin you can touch, everyone is so surprised by how rough their skin is as a result of those.
It's pretty like cool. Sandpaper.
Yeah, definitely.
Like are the sharks that are in our touch pools rough to the touch, like, if you feel them?
You know, I don't think so, especially because I've handled Fern, our zebra shark, who I think her skin is super rough. So in comparison, the bamboo sharks is not as much so, but I find it very noticeable when you go from the tail, when you like touch them from tail to the head, because you really get a chance to feel that abrasiveness of their skin. Oh, when you go tail to head, it feels nice and very soft.
Very against the grain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cutting them against their dentin grain.
The little teethers.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we talked a little bit about it when you were talking about training, but what type of husbandry and vet care goes into taking care of our collection of sharks, especially acknowledging how many different species we have and they have different needs as well?
Yeah. So for the husbandry aspect, so they all have very different diets, especially in terms of the size of their diets. Like, for example, the bamboo sharks that get very teeny tiny food pieces, they have very small teeth. These teeth are actually lie flat along their jawline so that they can catch slippery prey, like small fish and squid, but also they're able to crack open hard shells like crabs and things like that. So very versatile teeth. But because of that, they eat very tiny prey items entirely whole. They don't really like rip and tear from a prey like you might think of when you think of a shark. Like a lot of people tend to think of great whites and tiger sharks and they're like, oh, all sharks must eat that way. Yeah. That's not the case at all. So another example is that zebra sharks eat in a very similar way as bamboo sharks. They're also part of the same, they are also part of the same family of sharks. Hence the very similar body shape and mouth shape too.
Did they like have suction when they eat? I think I've seen Fern eat before and the squid was there 1 second and then gone the next.
Totally. Yeah, she's got really powerful throat muscles and that helps her because she is a nocturnal predator. She spends a lot of time in the reefs and she'll nudge her nose through the reef looking for sleeping prey. And she'll use those powerful throat muscles to basically pull that prey out of its sleeping.
Like
spaghetti.
Cool. She's the shark boogeyman.
Shark boogeyman.
But she's so cute. Like, if you guys have ever seen Fern before, she's one of the cutest animals.
Adorable.
And she's been here since the aquarium opened?
She has, yep. She's a charter species.
Pretty impressive. But she is the boogeyman, is what I learned today.
To sleeping fishies.
They don't know what hit them.
No, they don't. And then our black-tip reef sharks, they are a lot more free. They swim really fast, so they actually do more of like a traditional hunting for their prey. And we use that to our advantage when we are training them. We use a target for them, and we move it through the water, and we let them chase it before giving them their food, get some exercise in for the day. And then Trying to think what else. So we make sure their food, they get a really good diet. We want to make sure that they also get lots of their vitamins in, as well as their exercise in for the day, as well as enrichment. We do all sorts of different enrichments by changing up their habitat. We can go in and give them different food items. We can hide their food in different contraptions. And then for their veterinary care, all of our animals do need to be seen by our veterinarian at least once a year. So our larger sharks and rays, we try to train them to swim into a stretcher so that we can easily get our hands on them in a very stress-free manner. And then other animals like our black-tipped reef sharks, they are easier to train into our husbandry pool. So we do that instead.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So everyone has their own method of being seen by the vet in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
And everyone's trained in some way, too, which is mm-hmm. cool. I guess I didn't appreciate that you are trying to mimic the movement of their prey items when you're doing a target. And
yeah.
so a moving target is much more reinforcing for a shark that wants moving prey than
exactly.
a stationary one. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that out in an interesting way. This is when we, RIP, our beautiful sand tiger shark, yeah, one of our black-tipped reef shark was excellent at stealing food from him.
Oh, no.
And I realized, oh, she likes to, like, chase her food.
Oh.
So I had to modify her feeding style a little bit for that.
Mm-hmm. Keep her away from him, too.
Yeah, that too.
That's funny. Well, we have a lot of shark species here at the aquarium, but I think some of our listeners might be wondering, what are we doing conservation-wise for sharks mm-hmm. at the aquarium?
Yeah, well, we're doing a lot. We are we participate in the study that does artificial insemination research on sharks. We've done this with our bamboo sharks and zebra sharks. And we have had a successful artificial insemination from our zebra shark fern. And we actually have one of the offspring here at our facility. Her name is Gatsby. She lives in our tropical reef habitat. And all of this has really great implications for conservation work for the animals out in the oceans. We're not there yet, but we're really hoping to get to that point where we can impact the ones out in the ocean too. And then also, you can at home make sure you choose sustainable fishing sources. If you do eat fish, to eat sustainable fish is the best way to go. You're making sure that you don't have bycatch, and that can include sharks, rays, and other animals, which is so bycatch is basically any unintended catch of something. Like, say, for example, you're trying to grab tuna or some other delicious fish item and you accidentally get somebody else in there instead.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose a sustainable fishery source, they make sure that there's very limited, if no, bycatch involved. And there's other things too, like if you're paying attention to the fish that you're consuming, some are endangered species, so making sure that it's not endangered species or has negative impacts on the ecosystem there.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that people can be doing just in their day-to-day lives
exactly.
that I don't think they realize they can be helping
mm-hmm.
in an animal like a shark in the wild, which is pretty cool to think about. We did also have some questions for you from social media.
Okay.
We asked our listeners, what would you ask a shark expert if you had the opportunity to ask? So we're going to switch over to Madeline so she can ask those questions.
Okay, cool. We had someone ask, do sharks lay eggs, and what are shark eggs made out of?
Yes, so sharks do lay eggs, not all shark species. So we have our zebra sharks and our bamboo sharks, at least in our tropical shark lagoon habitat. I'm not going to include all of our temperate ones.
Mm-hmm.
So those ones do lay eggs that you can see. And those, I actually did a little bit of research on this question. So it looks like the composition of the eggs really varies depending on the species, but it looks like there's a highly ordered, unique collagen-containing fibrils. And then in some species, there's more of a keratin base. So depending on the species, it's either more keratin or more collagen. So that's pretty much what they're made out of. And most of the shark eggs are in a really unique shape. They're also known as mermaid purses.
Mm-hmm, I love that.
They've got this cool tendril, and they use that tendril to wrap it around a coral to help it stay put so that it doesn't get washed to shore. So it's a really cool adaptation.
Yeah.
But yeah, not all sharks can lay eggs. Like,
we have a couple of cool videos on, I know, TikTok for sure, of, I think, fern laying mm-hmm. some eggs in shark blood. And it's fascinating to watch.
It's really insane.
It's really cool.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. Next question is, how do sharks sleep?
So sharks...
Or do they sleep?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sharks don't sleep in a very traditional sense like you and I go mm-hmm. to sleep. So what they have instead is an active and restful period. And their active stage, as you would imagine, is when they are hunting or foraging or interacting with their other tank mates and the example of Shark Lagoon. And then restful periods is where they're swimming. Or, for example, our zebra sharks, they just kind of lay at the bottom of the exhibit. That's a restful state. But mm-hmm. they don't have eyelids, so their eyes are still open.
Wow.
Yeah. And you can tell when a shark, especially like a black-tip reef shark, is having a restful period when you're diving the exhibit because mm-hmm. they just kind of aren't really paying attention to you. And so this is where having that safety diver is so important to protect the sharks.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's so funny. You kind of touched on this earlier, but can sharks be trained? And what do you train sharks to do here at the aquarium?
Yeah, sharks are very intelligent. You can train them. And we train our sharks to do a variety of different things. We can train them to be target trained. That means they come to a particular object that we call the target. It can be anywhere from like a white wiffle ball to a bucket lid. And that really helps to make sure that we bring our sharks directly to us so that we can provide them the correct food and in the correct way that they need it. And then we can also train our sharks to be stretcher trained. That's where we train them to swim through a stretcher, which is basically a sling with two poles at the end. And that way we can do our veterinary exam very easily. Or you can train them to swim into our husbandry pool. And that allows us to, again, do our veterinary exams nice and easily. So a lot of it is not only really great for our animals because it challenges them to try and figure out how to get their food, mm-hmm. but also it helps us with our husbandry needs too.
Awesome. What do we feed our sharks here at the aquarium?
We feed our sharks restaurant quality and sustainable seafood. They get a variety of different diets based on their natural food items. So, like, for example, our larger sharks, they get a lot of fishy things like mullet, mackerel, mahi-mahi. And then our zebra sharks, they get more of your invertebrates, so they eat a lot of squid and clam. And then for our little guys, like the bamboo sharks, they eat more shrimp.
Hmm. Do you find that they have favorite foods?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Oh, totally.
What are their favorite foods?
Well, the black tips, the gray reef, and the sandbar, they love mullet.
Really?
It's their favorite thing. Versus the zebra sharks don't really like mullet. They really like mahi-mahi.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. They have excellent taste.
Yeah.
Really good taste.
But they don't really like squid, even though they should be eating squid. Mm-hmm. So it's like the veggie. So sometimes I have to sneak it in between mahi pieces. And then the bamboo sharks really like mackerel.
That's interesting. I wonder what drives those preferences.
And it does change over time. Like, they have different, periods where I've noticed where they have more of an interest for fishy foods versus more invertebrates. And I suspect it has to do with, their egg laying cycles and things like that.
Mm-hmm. What they're craving, kind of.
Yeah.
I get it.
It's like, I want pickles and ice cream today. I'm laying an egg tomorrow.
Big day ahead of me.
Yeah.
Cool. How good is their sense of smell?
They have a great sense of smell. And while it is super great, I don't know the total number of, they can smell one scent in a million gallon or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I try to get away from the whole drop of blood thing because it's really not what they're smelling. It's more of the food proteins that they're keying into. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are like, oh my God, if you have a cut on your hand, should you be swimming with the sharks? Mm-hmm. And it's not a big deal. They really don't care. Because the proteins in your blood are not a food item for sharks. So they're not actively looking for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're fine with a cut. I have dove many times in Shark Lagoon with I'm a pretty clumsy human being. So I get cuts on my hand. And none of the sharks have taken any interest in me. Safe, I have it all in my hands.
She's not lying.
Yeah. And, so their sense of smell is good, but not nearly as good as their sense of hearing. Their hearing is much better.
Mm-hmm. Really?
they're actually very sensitive to hearing, so much so that when you're building and designing an exhibit for them, you really have to take into consideration sound and noise and vibrations from like pumps and other filtration components. Mm-hmm.
And it carries so much more underwater too. And it's funny, when you're diving here, you can hear all these things that you don't typically hear in the air. And you're like, oh, what is that? And
totally.
So, that's interesting. I don't think I realized that sharks can hear so well. Mm-hmm. What is that for? What are they listening for?
Well, they can hear like a struggling prey, which is why partly they say that if you're out specifically more like at dawn or dusk and you're just like splashing around like a crazy person, that's not a great thing because it attracts the sound of sharks. And they're going to want to come and investigate and see what you're doing. So it helps with detecting prey primarily.
Well, they seek out weaker fish or weaker animals or maybe something that's a little older because it's easier to catch.
Yep, definitely. They are a predator, and most predators do identify and pick out the food items that's going to be the easiest for them to handle. Especially with sharks, like they have a huge, it seems like a huge ocean. There's plentiful food options, right? But that's not really the case. And they really have to find a prey that they can take down and that has to basically let them survive for the next couple of days, sometimes couple of weeks. And then larger sharks, they go without food for months at a time. So they really need to make sure that when they spend the energy to catch a prey, that it is worth it for them.
Well, we know sharks are predators, but does anything prey on sharks?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that prey on sharks, especially depending on the size. Like the bamboo sharks, pretty much everything will prey on them because they're so tiny. Like bony fish, groupers will eat them, other large sharks, other large rays. I'm sure marine mammals will eat them too. And then so it really depends on like the size of the animal. I'm not too sure if there's many things that eat zebra sharks. I'm not sure about that one, but I know with black-tipped reef sharks, they've got other groupers. Black-tipped reef sharks, even though they have a very sharky look to them and a lot of people think they're very scary, they're so skittish because of their small size and, they have a lot of things to watch out for.
I'd be scared of a grouper, too.
they're huge. What about sharks? And other sharks. Is that ever a situation?
Sharks
prey on each other?
Larger sharks will prey on smaller sharks, but it's usually, like, it has to be a substantially larger shark to prey on a smaller shark. Yeah. And the sharks that we have in our exhibit are all similarly sized, so there's no concern with sharks preying on other sharks in our habitat. But out in the ocean, if, like, say, for example, black-tipped reef shark was swimming and they saw a teeny tiny little bamboo shark, they might try and snack on it.
Well, in Shark Lagoon here at the aquarium, we have our shark's house with other tropical fish and then also, as we mentioned earlier, a sea turtle.
Yeah.
How is that dynamic in the habitat?
It's very easy. The sharks really don't mess with the fish altogether too much. We feed them regularly, so they don't really have much of a food drive to go hunt for food. And then also, like we were talking about earlier, about how sharks really want to make sure they're preying on things that are struggling. As long as we keep our fish healthy and nice and strong, they are not going to be, the sharks aren't going to mess with those guys. And then the sea turtle, he's massive. Which is funny because he's an Olive Ridley sea turtle, and Olive Ridley sea turtles are the smallest sea turtle species, and he's still like, how much does he weigh? Maybe a little under 100 pounds. I'll have to double check.
They're the smallest turtle species?
Yes.
He's big.
I know.
I think I knew that because I've only ever known one Olive Ridley turtle, and he's enormous. Wow.
So he really pushes the other sharks around. It's his home, definitely.
He's the boss.
Yeah, he really is. So there's no concern. And then, of course, we make sure we don't put shark species that are known to prey on turtles in this habitat with him.
What kind of shark species would that be?
Tiger sharks.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
They do love turtles.
It's a good snack for
tiger turtles.
Yeah.
cool. Two questions about kind of how sharks evolve. Are they able to change their appearance to hide from predators, or do they have any evolutionary traits that allow them to better succeed in the ocean from predators?
Sharks don't really have the ability to change their colors, but they do have, like, depending on the species, different adaptations that allow them to either swim really quickly away from a predator or to blend in with their environment. Thinking of, like, an angel shark or wobbegon, where they've got, like, crazy skin colors to them and, like, texture that allows them to blend in with their habitat. So it really depends on the species.
I like the idea that there are sharks that are like, just look at all my frills. They'll distract you and just I'll slowly swim away.
Look at the angel shark.
Little jazz hands.
You don't want to eat this.
Too beautiful to eat.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
I love this question. What stops sharks from swimming backwards? Does anything?
Rachel does.
Rachel just physically stops them. Professionally, Rachel does.
No.
Don't backwards swim swimming. Backward.
This is such a funny question to me. Because, like, there's so many animals out in the ocean that don't really swim backwards. Yeah. And, like,
but
I don't know.
But sharks specifically.
I know. Everyone needs to know why sharks can't swim backwards. Well, they're just designed to swim forwards. Mm. I don't know what to say.
They're always moving forward. Goals only. Looking ahead. Yeah. Rise and grind.
Shark
never look back.
Yeah. I mean, they could quickly turn around and go backwards.
I actually think it's active state. Uh-huh. Grind.
Yeah,
it's not rise.
It's not rise.
They aren't sleeping.
Oh, my God. But I will say, like, with especially the epaulette sharks, they have specially modified pelvic fins. Those are the secondary fins on the side of their bodies. Those are modified that allow them to have a wider range of movement and motion, and they can actually walk. So they can go forward, and they can kind of go backwards, too. Not super well, but they can go backwards.
We do have a backward shark. We've got one.
Yep. They can go out of the water. Very all cool. The places.
Cool. I think this is a really important question to wrap on. What would happen if all sharks vanished from our oceans?
The oceans would be in a very sad state. Sharks are crucial for our ocean ecosystems. They are a top predator in most cases, and they really help to make sure that there's a nice variety of different species of animals, whether it be lots of different fish or invertebrates. So without sharks, you lose all of that. And you lose the diversity of our oceans. You lose diversity of our ocean ecosystems. So like reefs are known to collapse from the loss of sharks. So they have huge impacts on our oceans.
Yeah, I think as we go along, what we keep hearing week to week is, like, if we lost the species entirely, the entire ecosystem would change. And it just goes to show how interconnected really everything is. And, you know, you can't take out an apex predator like a shark from an ecosystem and expect it to not collapse because they play such an important role.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eat sustainable seafood.
Yes.
Right?
Number one.
Learn more about sharks and why they can or can't go backward depending on the species. And do your best to make sure you're taking care of our oceans because that's where our sharks live. Do you have any other advice for us, Rachel? Take us home.
Reduce the amount of plastic you use.
Perfect.
You know, I like that one's another really big one, too.
It's important for really all the animals out there.
Yep.
Definitely. Cool. Thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us today. I learned so much. That was awesome.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
More than I ever knew about sharks.
Truly.
Everybody, Google Greenland sharks. And what were the ones that walk backward?
The epaulette sharks.
The epaulette sharks. Mm-hmm. They can walk?
Yeah, they're walking sharks. They're super cool.
So cool. We should take a video of that.
Yeah, we have one. A couple,
we have
several.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just haven't seen them.
Yeah. It's okay.
I'm out to Shark Lagoon. I've never seen them walk, though. We'll have to make a video about it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Bye. Aquarium of the Podcific is brought to you by Aquarium of the Pacific, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. In 2023, the Aquarium celebrates 25 years of connecting millions of people worldwide to the beauty and wonder of our ocean planet. Head to aquariumofpacific.org to learn more about our 25th anniversary celebration. Keep up with the Aquarium on social media at Aquarium Pacific on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
This podcast is produced by Aaron Lundy, Madeline Walden, and Scott Shaw. Our music is by Andrew Reitzma, and our podcast art is by Brandy Kenny. Special thanks to Cecile Fisher, Anitza Valles, and our audiovisual and education departments, and to all of our amazing podcast guests for taking time out of their day to talk about the important work that they do. Podcific wouldn't be possible without the support of the Aquarium's donors, members, guests, and supporters. Thanks for listening.